Yeah, we know the Cavaliers were eliminated. That was rough. Wasn't this a wildly entertaining NBA postseason?
It was excellent.
It was really good.
It was excellent on both sides, both the Western Conference and the Eastern Conference side, between the Game 7, between Oklahoma City and Denver in there as well. That Knicks series against Indy was a lot of fun. Like, there was a lot of good basketball.
It really was. And I give the NBA credit because I just thought it was wildly entertaining. And we're in a situation now, and you can debate the pros and cons of this, that it does not appear that there's, you know, any dynasty currently. We might be on the cusp of one. And Oklahoma City could become that kind of a team. But there are a lot of teams capable of making a deep run in the NBA playoffs. And I think dynasties are often really good for a sport, the idea of things being wide open and very competitive, at least this year, certainly led to some really, really entertaining playoff basketball.
Parity is a wonderful thing for a league as well, because parity means...
Yeah, that's Dan Menigan, by the way.
Parity means that when the season starts, 20 teams think they have a shot. 25 teams think that they have a shot. Like, that's a great place to be if you're the league. And that's where you kind of want to be. It's part of the reason why Adam Silver is talking expansion, and you're hearing those conversations going on all over the place, is because there's enough talent in the league that you can have a conversation about 25 teams having a shot next year if things break their way, and especially if you play in the Eastern Conference.
I would agree with that. We had a very young Oklahoma City team. And Dan, I think that is good for the NBA. You know, we certainly enjoyed it here. We had a long run with LeBron being front and center in deep playoff runs. A lot of Golden State Warriors stuff. A lot of Boston Celtics stuff. Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with any of that.
The Lakers forever.
Good for them. Yeah, the Lakers forever. And many of it with LeBron. But I think we're starting to see a little bit of a shift. And not just in talent, but maybe in the way the teams are constructed. And that to me is interesting. I think Indiana is less constructed like the typical formula that's usually been successful. Oklahoma City might be more typical because they're built around a guy who has become a superstar player in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Another guy who's on his way to being really good. I mean, if you're going to make a comparison like this, if Shai is Michael Jordan, then Jalen Williams, at least one of the Jalen Williams, is clearly Scottie Pippen. And Chet Holmgren is better than any center. I mean, he might be Tony Kukoc plus, you know, and that's a really interesting threesome. And by the way, they're great in that commercial when they're all wearing that silly royal blue jacket.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, that's a good call.
That's more typical, you know, where you have the star player. But Indiana built a complete team that came at you as a unit more than most NBA playoff teams do.
Indy was so good about going, okay, DeMontis Sabonis is a really nice player. He makes us better, but we can get more for DeMontis Sabonis than we could for Miles Turner. Because, like, Miles Turner is where this whole thing starts. And that guy has been on the trade block for 10 years.
Yeah, I was going to say at least 5 years.
Since the minute he got drafted, it seemed like Miles Turner was on the trade block. And they traded Sabonis. They brought in Halliburton. They then made the trade for Siakam, where they gave up the third-round picks as well. They made the sneaky move of talking to Boston about Nesmith, who was sitting on the end of that bench because Boston had way too much talent. They went and drafted Nembhard. Ben Mathurin was a second-round pick. Like, this team is another one that was cultivated and built. It was just done in a way where Indiana never tore it down, because that's not how the Pacers operate. They don't believe in tearing it down to the studs and rebuilding it. They believe in just a perpetual retool. And that by retool, they can stumble into a core like this. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Mathurin was a first-round pick, by the way.
Okay. So one of them was a second-round pick. Was it Nesmith then?
Yes.
Okay.
Sixth overall pick for Mathurin, who I thought might take over yesterday when Halliburton went out, and he had a good game. But see, that's, you know, if you're looking at the Cavs, and we're going to look more deeply into the Cavs in the noon hour, but that's the type of guy that, you know, they can bring off the bench with Indiana that I don't know that the Cavs can bring off the bench. You know, Ty Jerome did that this year, but Mathurin can be a guy who could be a real hammer for them.
When it's back to your whole thing, what, Mathurin is 6'6"?
He's 6'6".
Yeah, that's back to your thing.
Yeah, it's a reality. Mm-hmm. It's the reality.
It helps.
If you look around with what happened in the finals, and folks, I'd love your thoughts on this. Did you enjoy the finals? Did you think it was entertaining? Did you like the basketball? Did it set some new trends for the NBA? 216-474-0092. I do think this finals can have some impact on the league because teams copy like crazy. That happens all the time. Not maybe like the NFL, but teams copy like crazy. Couple of things. More up-tempo, Dano. The speed of the Indiana Pacers was evident throughout the entire playoffs. They get the ball, and they did it in the regular season as well. They get the ball across half court. They get into their offense more quickly, and they pass the ball more per possession than most teams. That was cool to watch. It was fun to watch. And that's something that I think is easy to copy. Hey, let's pick up the tempo a little bit. Let's get that ball. Let's get the offense initiated. Get the defense a little off guard. Then let's move the ball like crazy and get open shots. In other words, really basic basketball. Really basic.
There was a great piece on The Ringer a couple days ago where they sat down and talked to Mike D'Antoni about this indie team.
Yeah, the type of basketball that he coached for years. Yeah.
Coached for years with the Phoenix Suns, the Houston Rockets, the New York Knicks for a little bit as well, and his whole philosophy of 6 seconds or less.
Denver,
and by that philosophy, 6 seconds or less was we need the best shot that we can get in any possession is within 6 seconds of the shot clock. That was always their philosophy in Phoenix. So they would run the ball up the floor, and they would try to find the open shot within the first 6 seconds of the shot clock.
And if you didn't find one, then you move the ball like crazy.
Move the ball like crazy and figured it out. And so it's so funny that this indie team came around to that general idea and a concept, but it makes sense because, again, one of the things that Indy had was a true point guard. Tyrese Halliburton was a true old school point guard. Yeah. Where he was going to find his shot, yes, no doubt, but he was going to set everybody else up, and he was going to set that offense up too. And he did that so well, and by pushing tempo, and by keeping people on their toes, and by doing, you know, the poking and prodding that he would do, were almost like what put guys on the yo-yo, where they would have to go up and down and up and down because he was just kind of sliding all the time. Such a talented, fun team to watch, and I would love to see more teams copy that. Because it's just a fun brand of basketball to watch. The hardest thing that would come out of it with the indie side of it is finding the true point guard anymore.
And you can make the argument that, you know, some guys are point guards, some guys aren't point guards. Think about Magic Johnson. And I know we're talking incredible Hall of Famer here and great talent. If Magic wanted to, he could have scored 30 points a game.
Absolutely.
But he didn't want to. He had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He had James Worthy. He had Byron Scott. He had Kurt Rambis. He had players that needed the basketball. And, I mean, how do you not get the ball to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar? Of course you do. So Magic did. You know, and that's the type, and I'm not saying Tyrese Halliburton is Magic, but that's the type of point guard philosophy that I've loved, and I was not a Magic Johnson fan. I was not a Laker fan. That's why I wasn't a Magic fan. But I loved the way he played the game. And you don't have to score 25 points as a point guard. You don't have to do it. And it's better if you have options so that you don't have to. And I think Indiana did. Halliburton took advantage of it, and they took him all the way to Game 7 of the NBA Finals.
Andre Miller had an unbelievably long career by the fact that he could set guys up with the best of them.
Yeah.
I mean, you watched it here in Cleveland for a good period of time, then I think he
led the league in assists 1 year.
He played all of 12 years after he left Cleveland as well, just setting guys up.
Not moving very quickly.
No.
And he didn't move very quickly when he got into the league.
Just knowing how to play basketball and knowing how to set people up and all that stuff. And I hope that becomes one of those takeaways that you're talking about from this series, that other teams go and look around college basketball and look around the G League and go, where is my true point guard? In fact, I look at this Cavs team and think to myself, I wonder what a true point guard would look like on this Cavs team.
I mentioned last week you weren't in the one day. Somebody called and we were talking about the Cavs and blah, 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 blah. And they were talking about, you know, Darius and Donovan, and we're going to get more extensively into that. And I said, here's what we're talking about. Imagine a guy like Tyrese Halliburton playing point with Evan Mobley and Donovan Mitchell. Imagine, Dano, imagine that. And that's what you're talking about here. And because there's so many guys in the league who can go out and score 23 points a game if you get them the ball. Guys who can go out and, you know, average 19 a game if you get them the ball, if you set them up. And that's why I think a true point guard could help so many teams. And maybe that is something that comes out of this series.
Well, and you saw what happened when Halliburton went down and McConnell took over, which is McConnell was looking for his shot. He was playing ISO ball. And all of a sudden, those Siakam back cuts all of a sudden got clogged up.
You know what,
and
though?
Those open shots were not there for Nembhard, and they had to work to get Nesmith open. Like, it, without that true point guard, that gravity was gone.
The one thing about it, though, and I have to give, I'm not going to say McConnell went ISO. Oklahoma City's defense was so good.
Smothering. Limbs everywhere.
They were so good last night.
I mean, it blew me away how it was just limbs everywhere. Like, it looked like some kind of like the science fiction monster with four arms that were just like everybody playing defense for Oklahoma City had four arms instead of two. Like, it just was insane how good that defense was.
And McConnell ended up salvaging the third quarter, but that's when Oklahoma City really pulled away.
Correct.
And they just came out and really played some really good defense. The other thing about this series, what might change in the NBA, and we've seen a proliferation of big scoring games in the NBA and scoring averages of teams going way up, Dan, and you're seeing 120-point games and, you know, with regularity. Oklahoma City was a really good defensive team in the regular season. And I wonder, and they did it with two bigs a lot of time, Isaiah Hartenstein and, of course, Chet Holmgren. And I wonder, does that lead to a little more of a big man defense emphasis? And if it does, there's one team that's already set up for that, and that team plays about a mile down the road here.
Well, let me take a half step back from what you said in the beginning, which is the idea of that sweltering defense. And it was there the whole regular season as well. I wonder,
exactly.
I wonder if some of what you saw there was also a benefit of playing the same team seven times, where there's really you have made every adjustment to the adjustment to the adjustment off of that other adjustment. Like, you know what the other team is going to do. Everybody knows everything. There's nothing left in the playbook that is going to open anything else up. And I wonder if some of that sweltering defense falls under that. Do you see it that way, or do you think that Oklahoma City, nah, man, it's just limbs and athleticism and good luck to you?
And scheme. I mean, you don't play good defense by accident. You have to want to play good defense in the NBA. The Thunder did, and it won them an NBA championship, among other reasons. How else could what happened in the finals change the NBA a little bit moving forward? How are teams going to tweak? More thoughts coming up, 216-474-0092. It's Baskin and Phelps. Dano's in for Andy today.
Has it turned in an hour and ever for the Cavs overnight? Tyrese Halliburton goes down. Last night, game seven, he looks like that's going to be out for a year. That's an Achilles injury. According to his father, who spoke to Shams Charania, Tyrese Halliburton, and it was a bad injury, enough to put him in crutches for the rest of the night and have that be part of the conversation.
You knew what it was as soon as you saw it.
Yeah, but I can't sit there and go shoot my mouth off because right. Who actually knows what happened?
Well, you're not a Twitter doctor. You can't just assume.
I actually blocked all the Twitter doctors out there.
I don't even go on Twitter anymore. Very rarely.
You're just the best, aren't you?
Well, what's the difference in you blocking all the Twitter doctors and me just not going on at all?
Because it makes it more fun. Plus, it's more conversational with me. It looks like he's torn his Achilles and he will be out for a significant amount of time. Probably not until October of 2026 is the beginning of that season. So it looks like he's going to miss an entire year. Has it become now or never for the Cavaliers with Tyrese Halliburton's injury and Jason Tatum's injury in Boston?
Well, I was just saying, I went home. I made sure we were at friend's house yesterday, and I told my wife, I'm like, I got to go home, watch this game. It's game seven, and like, not a huge NBA guy, but it's game seven. You got to go home and watch it, right?
Game seven.
And she goes, well, who do you want to win? Do you want the Thunder to win? You're from Oklahoma. Like, and we've talked about, like, they moved there after I left, so they're not my team, right? But I just told her then, I go, whichever, I want whoever wins that gives the Cavs a better chance to go further next year, right? And in a weird way, like the Halliburton injury gives them a better chance to move forward. I didn't wish it on him, but it's changed my mind about I want them to do this offseason.
Well, no one's wishing it on him, but no one's going to call you a bastard for trying to take advantage.
There's one less team now that you're competing with.
Yeah, you can feel that way. That doesn't make you a bad person for that. But I tell you what, I think there's a sub-question to this as well, because I think that this is where it hits you right in the face. When is that Donovan option? You looked that up earlier in the show. Do you remember when
he can opt out after next year?
After this coming year, right? After 2025, 2026. Then I do think it becomes now or never. And the reason for that is simple. I mean, you were frustrated after this last finals run, or excuse me, playoff run that didn't really become a run. Everybody else was frustrated. I think he was frustrated as well.
I think I had that wrong. I think the option is 27-28.
Well, then if the option is 27-28, then it does give you a little bit of time.
Because that's why it's a two-year window. That's why because they have this entire thing under control for 2 more years.
So no matter what, I think it's a two-year. Okay, because it... Yeah, I didn't know. I asked you. You gave me bad information, but that's beside the point. If it's 2 years, it's still 2 years. I think that when you get those guys back in 27, 28, or 26, 27, I think it's going to become a little bit different and obviously more difficult in the East. It's already going to be more difficult in the West. But coming out of the East, I think people look at this is your opportunity. This is put up or shut up time for this team, because they're as frustrated as they've ever been with this team. And to the point where I think that they've wanted to make trades to punish guys some way, somehow. And I don't believe in any of that, but it's like, hey, this is going to be time to take that next step, if ever.
But they won 64 games.
But they didn't do anything in the postseason.
We're acting like they were the Magic.
And overall, Jason, I agree with you. But when you don't do anything in the postseason, you're killing any regular season zest. Like, I can sell you on the regular season in some way about Evan's growth because of Darius's injury.
Yeah.
People are just not going
to
buy that.
I'm not trying to say that 64 games wins them anything. It doesn't. I'm saying to have this conversation about, well, is now the time? Yeah, it's been the time. It was the time. But it was as soon as they made the trade for DeAndre Hunter, it became the time.
But I think it's the time naturally for this team. This is what's most frustrating about it. Now's the time. Time for what? Well, time to get to the finals. So many people I'm talking to right now, they don't believe that they can go to the finals without a significant trade.
And that's why
I don't know how you make that trade, but they believe that's the only way you're going to get to the finals is with shaking up the core four.
And that's why I just think the pendulum has swung so far the other way on this and how this team is viewed. I just think it's unfair. And I was as hard on them as everybody else was when the season first ended. And yeah, they deserved it. They deserved the scorn to have the season that they did and to be, I mean, to have the horrible timing of playing your worst basketball of the year at the most important 2 week stretch at that moment is terrible. But that doesn't mean that it's an awful team that you blow the whole thing up.
No.
And plus with the rules the way that they are, it's very, very difficult for them to make a trade and get better.
Exactly.
That's the reality.
But you're not, I think for like Anthony has brought this up several times. You're not blowing the thing up. I think you have more of a risk of blowing it up if you move on from a Darius Garland than people want to admit, because you could bring in a bunch of role guys, as has been said to me, and I think he could be just a programmatic non-fit and be a non-entity in the postseason. I still think he can make the postseason, but I don't know if you're going to be any more of a threat than what you've ever been before by taking away talent from your basketball team. Naturally, I think that it has to start with Evan, but I think that the clock is sped up with a lot of people where your opportunity is not going to be much better out of the East. Orlando's going to be better this coming year. Yeah. Detroit is going to naturally get better. Who knows what they're capable of? I don't know what their cap situation is or anything like that, but I'm sure they're capable of something. Like, we're a team that's kind of up against it. I have Boston that, as you have said earlier this morning, not just with the Jason Tatum injury, they're going to shed salary and they're going to be getting rid of some guys, which means that you are going to be able to take that next step. You're already the number one seed, but in seriousness with everybody else, taking that next step. So this coming year is very much that year. except that the fans don't really trust the guys who are in the uniform now because of what happened in the postseason. They do not trust these guys anymore.
When you talk about trades and when you talk about Darius and you talk about moving on and breaking this up, what's really fascinating to me in all of this, for years, there was, I've talked about this before, but there's this saying in the NBA that four quarters don't equal a dollar. That you want dollar players in the NBA. Dollar players are what win you championships. Obviously, LeBron, Kevin Durant, these are dollar players. Donovan Mitchell's a dollar player. You can't trade a dollar player, get four quarters back, and be a better team. You would take the dollar every time. Last night, Sam Presti said he absolutely believes that depth is the new way in the NBA. And it's just, it's as we talk about this new world, as we talk about parity, as we talk about this dynamic shifting, I wonder if that is still true. Do four quarters equal a dollar?
Then,
and I don't know that we know the answer to that.
Then let me ask you another unanswerable thing. Are we focusing on the wrong people then? Like, I hear about Okoro or Struess or Wade or someone else there and the possibilities of making moves in those spots. And I think that people just go, well, that's not going to fix anything. Okay, but if we're talking about depth and guys who can help out, like Darius Garland, no matter what, is going to be injury prone. That's just what his career is. Evan Mobley is going to put on more weight, but he's still going to be more slight. You don't want him too heavy. Jared Allen's Jared Allen, and Donovan is still always going to be 6'3 or 6'4, which still makes him undersized. As much muscle as he has,
he ain't 6'4.
It's going to make him, okay, so he's 6'3. It's going to make him undersized. So the part where you become better is on those margins, is on that edge, because I don't think you can move on from those four guys. The easiest one, I think, to move on from is Jared Allen.
Yes.
And that means you're going to get more depth, hopefully, because you find guys that are coming along with these other teams that are not household names. We have guys on this team that are not household names. Where are they when you need them the most? It's easy to fill it up against Miami, a team that wasn't trying. It was obviously much different in the second round.
Max had an awful final game. What was he, 0-for-9, I think, in the closeout game?
And sent a text to everybody before it about terrible, how hard they were going to work.
Terrible, terrible, terrible final game. Up until that point, I thought Donovan trusted him more than anybody else on the floor throughout the playoffs. So I would not put him, like, to me, he's one of the, and he's got the finals experience. He's been there. He understands that he's one of the few guys on this roster that has. I would not put him in that conversation. In terms of Okoro and Wade, they have no trade value. Like, Dean has more than Isaac. Isaac has no trade value.
Well, I don't, but where else am I supposed to improve? I can't improve anywhere else. I can't just trade away Darius Garland for a bunch of no-namers.
I agree with you. And that's why, so when you look at, like, look at how Boston did it. They didn't touch Jalen and JT were their core pieces.
Yes.
Marcus Smart was an integral piece to what they did. And I remember foolishly now at the time thinking, I don't know if they got better or not by trading Marcus Smart and bringing in Porzingis. And then, I mean, Porzingis had a ton of injuries too. But then when you look at Porzingis, you're like, oh yeah, okay, this is a totally different monster. They're significantly better. And the Jrue Holiday piece was a huge piece for them. Same thing with OKC. Shea was the guy there, but Josh Giddey was important to what they did. So to me, the translation there is Jarrett. So Evan and Donovan are probably your untouchables at this point. Darius, I would put third on that list, and Jared is the one. Jared's very important to what they do. He's integral to what they do, but he's also been a no-show when they needed him the most the last couple of years. And I wrote after the season, I don't know how you bring him back. I just don't know how you bring him back. But at the same time, you can't just give him away for nothing, and it's very difficult for this team to make trades right now.
To talk everything in between, we head out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. And welcome in Zach Harper of the Athletics NBA coverage. Zach, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
I'm a little too smooth with the Halliburton thing. That was really depressing last night.
That was real unaffected right there. Yeah. That was real unaffected, yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty detached from most things in real life. Sure. But
yeah, I get it, yeah.
So before we do anything, it's interesting to watch people reacting to the latest round of parity in the NBA and yet another champion crowned. And I thought by seven champions, I thought that we'd get to a point where people are like, oh, this is cool. I won too many takes over the last 24 hours that this is still bad for the NBA because we're so used to dynasties. I'm just sure, where are you with the, we don't have dynasties in the NBA right now?
Yeah, I mean, I hate parity personally, and I've hated it for a long time, mostly because I think dynasties are good. I think it's good when you have something to topple, right? Like, I think we always talk about, like, oh, things were so much better in the 80s and 90s. Well, yeah, we had the Celtics and the Lakers. We had the Bulls. Like, we had those teams where you have this thing of, like, wow, this is never going to get beaten. And then someone, you know, eventually figures out how to beat it, or it goes away, and now it's time for something to replace that. And I do think that's good for the league historically. The Thunder do have a chance to create a mini dynasty within this window before the second apron comes for them, because this is, like, we can't deny, like, this is a hard cap. The league has created a hard cap without calling it a hard cap. But I do think that if the league was better at marketing itself, then the parity would be fine. But I don't think the league is good at marketing itself in this way. They keep trying to, when Adam Silver's asked about, hey, low ratings and all this stuff, he just starts, like, praising the NFL instead of selling his own league. Like, I really think the NFL has a marketing I really think the NBA has a marketing problem when it comes to how they sell their league, because they're just focused on the NFL. And so I just believe that if you're going to do the whole parody thing, you have to make it have some weight to it instead of just feeling random. Maybe the Thunder changed that. But when you go into last night, we were supposed to get a great game, and we got a great game for 7 minutes. And then to the Pacers' credit, they put up a great fight for as long as they could, and they were leading at halftime. But inevitability hit, because you just can't keep up with that Thunder team without your best player.
Zach, why is it you think that there are so many Achilles injuries right now?
Oh, man. It's tough. I do think there is an issue with specialized training. I do think there's an issue with how players are year round and how they kind of overuse things. I don't think it's necessarily a load management issue as much as it's a training issue. Just from the people I've talked to and just kind of my whole guesswork with it. And also you get into players playing with calf strains, right? Like, this is pretty consistent when a player has a calf strain or a calf injury and they try to play through it. You get a lot more of these. Damian Lillard had a calf strain. There was no reason for him to try to push it. Like, the Bucks weren't going to win anything this season. He tried to push it. It pops. You know, we've seen that with Kevin Durant in 2019. We see it with Halliburton. Now, with Halliburton, you're not going to tell him, hey, it's game 7 of the NBA Finals. Like, you got to sit this one out. I get it. Like, even if you tell him you have a 90% chance of popping your Achilles, I'm guessing he'll take that 10% chance of not doing it, and I don't think you blame him. But I do believe that this is just where we are with training and the body and calf injuries and everything, that if you have a calf injury and you try to overstep on these things, you're more likely to pop that Achilles.
So thinking back to the Cavs second round series, they were pretty much on their way to elimination when Donovan Mitchell came down with a calf injury. Darius had just come back. And at the time, I was freaking out because I remember Clay, I remember KD, I remember all the... Do we think that because of when the Halliburton injury happened, do you think this might, at least maybe not in Game 7 of the NBA Finals, do you think this would be the clarion call to NBA players of, hey, it's the first round of the playoffs, don't play on an injury?
Man, it's a good question, because I think it's tough to convince individuals that it's not going to happen to them, right? Because I think these guys are supremely confident. I think they feel like, invincible at times. I think they feel like warriors. You know, I think there's all this supreme confidence that goes into it that makes them able to be as good as they are and as great physically as they are. So I think the players are always going to want to play, and especially when you get into, like, it's one thing to play through something in January. You know, now it kind of looks funny that Nico Harrison was so mad about Luka Doncic not coming back from a calf strain in January, right? Like, it kind of makes sense now. But you look at the playoffs and the stakes of the playoffs. I get why that extra pressure is there for the players to want to come back. I don't know that you'll ever collectively convince players to not want to play through it. I think that you may, if you're the team, try to urge them not to. But again, there's a lot on the line with these situations, and not just for the team, but for the players as well.
Zach, how wide open is the East now?
Oh, I mean, could you convince yourself that we have a Pistons Magic conference finals next year? Like, I don't think it's that crazy to think about, right? And, like, if I told you that a year ago, I think you'd slap me. Like, it just doesn't make sense to think about. But, yeah, I mean, you could convince me a lot of teams that aren't that far along have a chance of making the conference finals. I mean, I think the Cavs maybe didn't feel great about the way that they were knocked out in the second round. They've got to feel really good about their situation now. The Magic, after the Desmond Bane trade, have to feel really good. The Pistons have to feel really good, depending on what they do this offseason. I just think there's a lot, you know, the Knicks, depending on what they do with their coaching situation, they have to feel really good about bouncing back. I mean, there's no clear cut, like, this is the giant of the East and you have to go through them. I mean, maybe that's Cleveland by default because they had such a great regular season, but they've still got stuff to prove in the postseason.
So one of the reactions to last night, and especially the Halliburton injury, was, well, the East is so wide open, you don't have to make a change to your core four now. So should the East looking wide open like you're talking about, should that impact how the Cavs proceed this offseason, how they attempt to alter this roster?
I mean, I differ with some people on this Cavs situation because – I do think you've gone three straight postseasons, and look, you can make plenty of excuses of, and reasonable ones too. I'm not even saying they're cop-outs, like they're reasonable excuses of, like, you had an injury here, you had an injury there. But the main overarching theme has been there is something keeping this team from making it beyond the second round every single year. This year, to me, while there were injuries, to me, it just seemed like guys were not prepared to take the shots that they needed to take. Like, that team just seemed rattled in those big situations where I did not expect them to be, because that's not the team we saw all season long. And maybe that is just bad luck, or maybe that is some kind of, you know, just mental makeup that they couldn't get over in those big moments in the second round. But I think you have to look at the makeup of this team and just say, is this actually what works in the postseason? Is this combination actually what works? And it's kind of what we went into last offseason wondering about them. And then Kenny Atkinson came in and did such a phenomenal job that we kind of forgot about all that, and with good reason. Now, it might have just been a fluke that they got knocked out in the second round, but I do think Indiana exposed some issues of, you put some pressure on this team, maybe those role players aren't ready to knock down shots. Maybe some of these guys aren't ready to step up in big moments. I think a lot of that can also be mitigated by Evan Mobley's going to get better, right? This isn't the best version of him that we're going to see. And I think these kind of lessons for someone that young are really good. But yeah, I think I don't think you can just go into next season saying, hey, the East is a lot weaker, we can just keep the status quo, because keeping the status quo hasn't exactly worked out.
All the reports suggested the Cavs were involved in the Kevin Durant, at least, trade sweepstakes. Do you feel like, if you're a Cavs fan and you hear that, that's a good thing because it means that they're trying to be proactive about shaking this up? Or do you feel like it's like, well, all right, everyone's involved in Kevin Durant, you didn't really do anything there?
I mean, I would be mad if they weren't, right? Like, I do think you have to kick the tires on any big situation like that. So, no, I think that is a good thing. I would like to know how far along they were. If I'm a Cavs fan, just like, hey, they made a phone call. Like, anyone can make a phone call, right? Like, that doesn't really mean anything. Like, it's always this funny thing where you get a rumor of, like, hey, this team talked to another team about trading Anthony Edwards. I was like, yeah, if I call you and say, hey, I'd like to trade for Anthony Edwards, technically we talked about trading for Anthony Edwards. That doesn't mean anything, right? So I would like to know the depths of that if I'm a Cavs fan. But no, like, doing the due diligence is always good.
Is 1 to 2 years of Kevin Durant worth 5 to 7 years of Jalen Green?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially, look, Jalen Green's super talented, but he still has a lot to figure out. And we saw that as this team went through what they went through during the postseason, especially. Like, we saw the flash, right? We saw the flash where he was a monster in a couple moments of that series. And then there were times where you wondered, how is he even on the floor right now? And so harnessing that, I don't know that he was going to get the consistency in Houston with their identity and what they needed from him. I don't know that he was going to get that consistent role and those opportunities, because they didn't really have time to, or really the opportunity to just let him go out there and iron that stuff out. They're almost too far along for that. The problem is, I don't think he's going to get that in Phoenix either, because they've got Bradley Beal and Devin Booker. So that's not exactly a good fit for Phoenix. But I do think Houston's in a situation where, because they have such a young core and the contract extensions aren't hitting yet, they still have a couple of years before they really get into that situation. Yeah, I think you bring in a veteran like Kevin Durant, you see if it boosts them into a higher tier in the Western Conference in terms of playoff success. you get them that playoff success, and then you start building from there once he's done.
Zach, incredible stuff as always, man. Appreciate you, and enjoy the offseason, which I guess in the NBA lasts about, it was about 2 days till the draft, and then we have free agency after that.
Yeah, maybe in a month. Maybe in a month I'll enjoy it. Appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Zach Harper there. The Athletics NBA coverage on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. And now we pivot right into, should the Cavs, who should the Cavs take at 49? Why is no one talking about who the Cavs will take with the 49th or 58th picks?
I mean, they say 49 is like 39 in most drafts.
I mean, this could be
the new... We got to get ourselves excited for this one.
I want to know who the next Sir Dominic Poynter is, all right? I got to know who the next person, the next Imani Bates is that everyone will just call for whenever the Cavs have a bad stretch, despite no evidence that he's ready to make any sort of contribution. He scored 20 points in the G. Everybody scores 20 points in the G.
Anybody else get drafted during a Taco Bell commercial?
That
we want to know. We want to know.
Who, the next Jokic, as they're known. We'll react to what Zach had to say about the Cavs, Durant, and the future shape of the NBA in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
First round of the NBA draft is tonight. It's become a two-round affair, Andy. Remember, they used to have multiple rounds of the NBA draft. Then it became a seven-round deal, and now it's a two-round deal. You get the first, you get the second, and now it's over 2 days. How about that?
Well, you know, you can't have enough NBA draft, especially for Cavalier fans that'll be sitting through the first night of it tonight, and then waiting. And you know, is there any chance the Cavs have any ammo to move into the first round? I don't know.
Might be.
That gives you a little bit of intrigue to maybe want to watch tonight.
Let's find out, shall we?
We shall.
We go to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. You know him as the former head coach of the Atlanta Hawks, the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Memphis Grizzlies. You know him as the czar of the telestrator with Marv Albert, color analyst extraordinaire for NBC Sports back in the day.
Yes.
Color analyst on the Los Angeles Clippers telecast. And, of course, the leading host of that fine podcast, Basketball Gold. He's Mr. Mike Fratello. Hello, sir.
Wow. What? Here's something else. You couldn't think of enough things to make up a long introduction, could you?
I had one more for you. I would have said fine connoisseur of our best foods here in Northeast Ohio, especially Little Italy. Yes.
I would have loved that. Yeah, that would have been the most accurate thing you said.
Thanks for
your
time.
How are you, buddy? I haven't talked to you in a while.
Yeah, how you doing?
Doing great. Yeah, it was, I thought, an exciting NBA season. The playoffs were terrific. You know, for the most part, it was... people couldn't believe one, just walking around bumping into people. They were so engaged. First of all, the fact that it was Oklahoma City against Indiana, everybody's like, what? And I'm sure the TV people were doing the same things when the ratings came out. And then as the series went on, you talk about games that turned and wound up with dramatic endings. And it was just, it was fun basketball. And congratulations to Oklahoma City. They have an incredible young championship team.
Mike, and I'm trying to get this confirmed. The reason that it was so enjoyable was I thought we watched team basketball with hard-pressing defense in a championship series, and we saw an underdog like Indiana do that night in and night out. I might be one of the few that love the defense that we saw with full-court pressure and stuff like that. I hope that's the norm moving forward, because I get real tired of watching guys jacking up threes all game long.
And let's give Indiana credit. Their defense that you noticed and many other people noticed how good their defense was not the old Indiana defense. This was a new brand of Indiana defense. And if I have it correct, Rick Carlisle in the beginning of the year turned the defense over to Jenny Boucher, who's his assistant coach. That's the blonde-haired lady sitting next to him on the bench. And if you saw the timeouts, she kind of went in the timeouts first while Rick was planning his strategy on the next play, et cetera, et cetera. And then when she was done, Rick would walk into the huddle. So she did a great job. And I thought the one key move for them was you can't press the whole season in the NBA and it not have a toll on your players. 82 games, the travel schedule, and then to press 94 feet every night is very, very demanding on the players. So I've coached a team where we did press with one unit but didn't press with the other unit because the second unit was a better pressing team than my first unit was. But that's different. What they did is they played the regular season the way they played it with their, quote, normal defense. When they got to the playoffs, they picked you up right after they scored or after they missed a shot. They were standing right there waiting for you, and they forced more turnovers and got more easy baskets than you can imagine off of that. And congratulations to them. It's a terrific strategic move on their part to change the defense that way and stick with it throughout the entire playoffs.
Mike, do you think that the way that, and let's go Indiana first, the way Indiana played, and I used the word relentless early on in the playoffs to describe the way they played. I mean, it looked like they just didn't let up at any point in any game. They just kept going and going and going and playing enough guys that it seemed like the guys never ran out of gas. Does that carry over into the regular season and with other NBA teams, or I don't want to call it an aberration, but I just loved it because it was like, yeah, that's the way this game can be played and many people think should be played. Can that carry over?
It seems like every year when a champion is crowned, the next year you see somebody or a couple somebodies try to emulate what they just saw the year before. They liked something that they hadn't seen. Whether it's a new set of plays, a new way of defending, a pick and roll, whatever it might be, and you'll see teams try it the next year. What Indiana did was they played frenetic basketball at both ends of the floor, not only offensively, because they would get a shot back up in 3 to 4 seconds if they could. If you let them drive it and push it full court, they'll take it and go right to the rack and try to score or kick it out for a quick shot from the corner. Meanwhile, defensively, they then, when the playoffs came, turned the defensive end of the floor into frenetic basketball where they were picking you up, trying to force turnovers, jump switching hard. If you went to certain spots on the floor, they had the freedom to trap you there and go into full rotations. All of that caused turnovers, caused easy buckets for them. You got to congratulate them. Hats off to them for playing the way they did. You got a team that not many people knew how good they really were, who showed that they belonged in the NBA Finals.
Mike Fratello joining us, former Cavs head coach, Los Angeles Clippers color analyst. When you started talking about the finals, you said, and you have a young champion in Oklahoma City. They started the year as the youngest team in the NBA, and here they win the NBA championship, Mike. And you don't throw around the word dynasty very often. Could these guys become one?
Well, you know, since the playoffs, I've been mistakenly saying the Cavaliers only one of two teams, okay, that won 60 or more games. I was wrong. I had forgotten about Boston because of them getting knocked out early. But Oklahoma City won 68 games. The Cleveland Cavaliers won 64 games. And Boston won 61 games. And the next closest team was 52 wins, and that was Houston. In the Eastern Conference, the next closest team was New York with 51 wins. So when you talk about OKC, 68 wins, winning a championship, they have 17 first-round picks over the next 5 years, I believe it is, that they can use up. That's so, silly. For example, in tonight's draft coming up, they can take two, and if they want to be generous, okay, we'll throw in a third first-round pick. You can have three of our first-round picks down the road. We want to go up to number two tonight or number three tonight because they see somebody that, look, they understand that they're going to have to replace players. The way the league is, contracts run out, guys become unrestricted free agents, they move on. So understanding that, they may be putting the next piece in place for down the road to keep that dynasty going. But to answer the question, yeah, why couldn't they be? If they remain healthy, the toughest thing is going to be to keep the core pieces happy, together, wanting to be part of a team that continues to have a shot and try to win championships.
Coach, when I'm let's listen to all these people that are calling us and saying Darius is the guy they have to trade, I don't necessarily know if it's because of his ability. It's just his, you know, what he's worth and what his value might be to bring something back for a team that could be stuck under the second apron going into this thing. How valuable do you think Darius Garland is to bring him back next year? And is he more valuable as a trade asset than he is as a player right now for this team?
Got to keep in mind, when Darius got hurt, he went out. We could not at times get the ball over the half court line cleanly. That means you're turning somebody else, whoever it might be. And I'm not saying they're going to go out and find another point guard, but you're either taking the ball, putting it in Donovan's hands, or you're taking Jerome, if you can sign him because he's an unrestricted free agent, and moving him into the starting lineup. Or do you go with Porter, okay, who at times, when he played well for them? Do you try and find that other piece? Because Darius is going to be out for 4 to 5 months with that toe surgery. Mm-hmm. But we, our brand of basketball changed when he went out. And to me, the one reason was because Darius could blow by the defender, straight line to the rim, full speed ahead. That didn't happen when it's Donovan, when it's Ty Jerome. They don't do it the same way. They don't play the same way that Darius does. Donovan has a high dribble. Ty Jerome had a hard time against quickness, getting the ball over the half-court line. So you needed Darius Garland to get you some easy buckets, to get you some kick-out passes. And that's what we lost when we lost Darius. And, you know, if we would have won that second game, who knows, that whole thing might have turned out differently. But the people were calling for do a trade. Why would you break up a 64-win team when only three teams had 60 or more wins? Keep this in mind. We have Garland out for 4 to 5 months. DeAndre Hunter didn't join the team until late in the season. So he's going to come back better just going to training camp through Kenny Atkinson's system, understanding it better. What's going to happen with Ty Jerome, Sam Merrill? Unrestricted free agents, questionable. I'm not sure they can keep both of them because of this second apron. And I'll get to that in a second, but got to make a decision who you want to keep, I think, between Jerome and Merrill. You got Porter, who's a point guard that got minutes and played well. Tyson, okay, the youngster, the two guard, they like what they see with him. He's been developing, getting better and better. He'll be back in the summer league, I'm sure. You can slide Donovan Mitchell over if you want to that point guard at certain times while Darius is recovering. But I would not do anything major with the roster. It's a deep roster. It's a good roster. They have some terrific players on the roster. And let's look at the opponents. Indiana has now lost Halliburton for all of next year. So Indiana is not going to be the same team. Their two free agents they have, Miles Turner, unrestricted free agent, Thomas Bryant, unrestricted free agent. That could be three pieces that change for them. And Boston, the other team that won 60 or more games, look what they just did in the last few days. Porzingis is gone. Holiday is gone. Those are two out of their five starters that they've gotten rid of. And people are scratching their heads saying, I wonder why they did that. I read where those two players being moved on have saved the Celtics $180 million because of that apron, that second apron. The second apron, for those who don't know, it can do like affect you two areas. One, it limits what you can do trade-wise. Two, it saves you a lot of money. You want to get out of that apron, second apron, as quick as you can. So Mike, Boston could be different.
Mike Fratello joining us, former Cavs head coach, working with the Los Angeles Clippers telecast team as the color analyst. With Boston making those moves, Mike, they clearly don't want to pay the money. And you think all that money, Drew Holiday or Porzingis, what would you rather have? With Tatum out, probably the money, and then you take it from there. If you're the Cavs, do you think you're more able to improve the team and try and tweak the team by keeping the core four together and working around the edges there, or some kind of a major move where you might also save some money and be able to use that in other areas. I would think Kobe Altman has a decision to make if he decides to change what he said, you know, in his postseason press conference where he's keeping the core four together. But can you improve the team and not bust that up, Mike?
Jeff, there's four ways to improve a team in the NBA. Draft picks, trade, sign free agents, internal development. So if you can get something done in one of those ways, depending on what you have to give up. Okay, me, if you're asking me, would I break this team up? Would I trade one of the major pieces? I would not. First of all, we have an owner who is willing, has always been willing to pay that extra amount if it winds up being a penalty because of, you know, expenses due to second apron, et cetera, et cetera. If you had an owner that says, no, we can't spend extra money, well, that's a concern. Then you're working for a guy who's telling you, we're going to nickel and dime this. That's not Dan Gilbert. He's never been that way. So you've got a great owner who's willing to get it done to win a championship. Now you've got to decide, what can I get? And if you tweak and take a piece away, is that going to damage what you have? Chemistry, and I can tell you, I went through in Atlanta. We lost in that game seven to the Boston Celtics, the great game seven, where Dominique had 47 points. And at the end of that season, we were a young, dynamic team. And we lose to the Boston Celtics in the seventh game of the playoffs. And we could have brought everybody back. They loved each other. They were very, very united as a team on, off the court. We got rid of two of those pieces and brought in two new pieces because we thought that was going to take us to the next level. It didn't. We never had the same chemistry. We never had the same togetherness. We were never the same team. And it showed that just because of the name or because they've been an all-star X number of times, all the stuff has to fit together to work. And this Cleveland team, I think, has that, you know, what it needed. So I wouldn't touch it. I'd be there and let Darius get healthy, develop some of these other guys, and come back again, because two of the other teams I just mentioned you are not going to be close to what they were last year, and that's Indiana and Boston.
Mike, I just want your thoughts on Kenny Atkinson and how he gets better in year two. It's going to be hard to top what he did in year one, especially during the regular season. How does he become a better coach, and what do you think he learned? Because you've stood there. You get it.
I think he learned coaching is so easy. You come in the first year, you take over a team, you win 64 games, you win the coach of the year, and everybody loves you. He learned that immediately.
Until you get to the playoffs, you're great, yeah.
It's great because now Kenny went through this first year here in Cleveland. He had a chance to put his system in. I'm sure he looked back now when the season's over and said, okay, what should we do differently? Should we keep everything the same? Can we tweak things a little bit here and there because of what happened in that Indiana series? And look, they understood everything that I just mentioned and beyond that. They understood why, okay, they struggled against Indiana in that series. So how do we do things differently so that if we face that again next year, we're ready to handle it better? And we've got this year under our belt. And, you know, disappointment can be a great motivator sometimes. You lose a series like they did to Indiana, and you come back the next year. If you've got the right mentality, the heart of a warrior, you come back and you want to show that, hey, it happened last year, but we learned from it, and we're a better team this year.
Mike Fratello joining us. Mike, last thought, if you're looking at Boston, they're clearly – they have, you know, pieces missing, Tatum out, Halliburton out in Indiana. But you have another team in Orlando that had some really nice pieces, long pieces, and they pick up Desmond Bane in a blockbuster. Then you have JB's team up in Detroit that really made some strides. Who else in New York, we'll find out who their coach is going to be. Who else in the East do you think can be a challenger next year along with the Cavaliers?
remember, Detroit played the majority of the season without their point guard. Okay, he was out the entire season for them last year, almost the entire. I'm not sure if he ever did get back. I can't remember whether he did get back right at the end or not, but their starting point guard was out. So Detroit had one heck of a year, considering they were missing their starting point guard. Indiana, that's a huge piece, picking up Bain because of his ability to make shots. You know, one of the things the Magic struggled with was three-point shooting, and turnovers was the other thing. Well, Bain will make a shot for you. You get him the ball, you get him an open look, he'll make a shot for you. So they have improved in those areas. And look, who knows what's going to happen in New York? Right now, if you said to me, who do you think the leader is? I think the leader is Jason Kidd. My hunch is he would wind up as a new Knicks head coach, but you never know. Kind of taking Doncic away from him in Dallas, and then a number of his assistants now moved on to other jobs. I still think they're going to be a heck of a team. Everybody comes back healthy. You have, the backcourt that they're going to have. You have Anthony Davis, and it's not a bad team. But Jason, he's kind of like that. He gets 3 or 4 years, they're good, and then maybe it's time for his next job. 3 or 4 years, they're good, and then go on to the next job. So that wouldn't surprise me. And then the rest of the Eastern Conference, I don't know. Are the teams like the Atlantas, the Brooklyns, the Charlottes, are they ready to move up and get to 500 ball? Because then you're talking about a playoff opportunity. If you get yourself to 500, you got a chance there for a play-in or playoff opportunity. There's no question that the Western Conference was much stronger than the Eastern Conference was. And when I looked at free agency, it's interesting. Of the top 10 or so, 7 of the top 10 free agents came from the Western or in the Western Conference. So we'll see what happens with that. Maybe all those guys flip over and wind up in the Eastern Conference next year.
Thank you for your time, sir. We appreciate it and glad that you enjoyed the finals and the playoffs as much as we did. It was really entertaining stuff for the NBA.
Guys, thanks for having me on.
Coach, thank you. I want to hear you sing an opera, Little Italy. That's what I want next.
Come on up there. We'll do it one night behind La Dolce Vita.
There you go. It's the place to go. It's the place to go. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Michael.
All right, guys. Thanks. Right,
Mike Fratello joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
Brian Geltzeiler joins us now. SiriusXM NBA Radio, also NBA TV. Brian, you see some of the moves that are being made. Are the Cavaliers falling behind in the Eastern Conference?
Not necessarily. The Eastern Conference is falling behind the Cavaliers because pretty much everything's collapsing around them. You're going to start a season next year with Damian Lillard's not going to be playing for the Milwaukee Bucks. Jason Tatum is not going to be playing for the Boston Celtics. And Tyrese Haliburton is not going to be playing for the Indiana Pacers. So for the Cavaliers, the question that they have to answer as we are in this, I can't say coming into the offseason because we're in the offseason right now. The question they have to answer is, do we have a roster construction issue? Do we have to mix things up a little bit, trade someone of significance here, i.e. a Darius Garland, a Jared Allen, to be able to maybe get some more size wings on our roster to match up better with other teams? That's the question that you have to answer if you're the Cavaliers. And listen, I would be okay with the fact that the Cavaliers ran all this back for one more shot to see where this can go and what this could be. But I do think there is a little bit of a roster construction issue just regarding how other teams are matching up and playing. And like, you look, listen, the Cavs had a better record than the Knicks this year, but the Knicks made it further. You look at the Knicks with the two big wings in Ananobi and Bridges and Hart as a third wing that plays in a lineup. It's an odd matchup for the Cavaliers with having the two smaller guards and the two bigs. Is that the right roster construction to be able to compete in today's NBA is the big question. And the other thing is, if you do deem that it is, who has to develop different skill sets associated with what they do to be able to play the way you need to play. And what I mean by that is Evan Mobley needs to become more of a perimeter player. You know, can you still have that? Who is going to be, who's your premier stopper defensively? And maybe that's going to have to be DeAndre Hunter. So there's a lot of questions that have to be answered if you're going to keep the roster as is. But I listen, it was a rough exit in five games to Indiana in a second round. I also don't think you can turn your nose up on 64 wins and having a coach that was really, really in tune with his team until they met that Indiana buzzsaw in the second round.
If they do make changes, who do you think should be on their way out? Because we know they're not trading Evan Mobley. We know they're not trading Donovan Mitchell. Everything else, I think, is fair to question. But if they do want to make changes to that roster construction, if you were Kobe Altman and you wanted to do that, what direction would you go?
Well, it's obviously one of two guys. Listen, Garland's going to have the most value on the open market. The problem with trading Darius Garland is, do you want Donovan Mitchell to play point guard? And I don't think I do. I like Donovan Mitchell exactly where he is, and I don't know that I want to disturb that backcourt. I think that backcourt was one of the best things that the Cavs had going this year. And Garland's a dynamic shot maker. I mean, there was this whole thought process where when Garland missed a few playoff games, oh, they're better without Garland. They're not better without Darius Garland. He is an all-star playmaker. So that's not the guy I would jump to move. To me, it's Jared Allen and try to see if I can bring in a size wing to pair with Hunter, and I would convert Mobley into essentially a stretch five. And if I were going to make one major change, that would be it. And yes, a guy like Cam Johnson of the Nets would be an interesting guy to potentially go get if he's available. And I'm not sure how available he is, but that's the kind of wing that you're looking at. One other guy that can stretch the floor, shoot 40% from three and guard the perimeter, that's got some size to him, 6'7", 6'8". That's what the Cavs really sorely lack outside of Hunter. The other teams that are competitive in the conference have multiple guys like that, and you need to have multiple guys like that. The Cavs do not. I mean, they leaned a lot into the Sam Merrills and the Dean Wades and the Ty Jeromes, and that had great results in the regular season. But you saw come playoff time, none of those guys are guarding people well enough. I mean, maybe Wade can hang in there a little bit. Jerome certainly can. Merrill certainly can. So you need a couple two-way wings, and if you're going to go in the direction of trading for a two-way wing, Jared Allen would be the guy I would probably lead on the way out.
You mentioned the other teams in the East that view themselves as competitive have those wing players, and you're not wrong about that, but I am curious from this perspective right now, and I understand that there's a long way to go before we watch teams actually play basketball that matters again, but right now, how many teams do you think can look in the mirror and say, we can realistically win the Eastern Conference next spring?
Well, so I think the Cavs are at the top of that list. I think the Knicks are right there at the top of that list of Cavs. Now, we don't know who's going to coach the Knicks. I would seriously doubt that the Knicks make any significant personnel moves regarding their starting five. So I think you'll see a similar team back there. I think you have to say the Orlando Magic have at least put themselves in the conversation. I don't know that I would. And I like Desmond Bane, and he's a great fit there because they need shooting, and that guy shoots the ball well and is also a decent enough defender. The only issue there is, are they good enough to really be the best team in the East with this current roster construction? They get four first-round picks for him and don't really have a lot of other cards to play. That's my complaint there, but I do think you have to put Orlando in the conversation. Call me crazy, but I'm not totally dismissing Indiana in the absence of Halliburton. I think that's a really deep roster, and I think guys are going to kind of adjust to not having him, and I think they're going to be pretty damn good again next year. And then the other team that I would kind of give a puncher's chance, Atlanta's going for it. Atlanta is trying to seize the opportunity. That's why they made this Porzingis deal. And listen, it's always a challenge for Kristaps Porzingis, but 1 year of Porzingis for Atlanta is well worth the risk that you can keep him on the floor and have him where you need him come playoff time, because that's a really interesting fit on that team. That's a good young team with a lot of the right kind of pieces. We talk about the long wings. They're loaded with those in Atlanta. So that's kind of the group that we're looking at, I think, in Eastern Conference. Obviously, Boston's not in that conversation till we know if Joel Embiid can step on the floor for Philly. I can't even look at them. And listen, Milwaukee, I wouldn't trade Giannis either if I were Milwaukee, but I got to see what they do in this offseason where they have literally no assets to trade off of outside of Giannis. And I got to see what they're able to do free agent wise on the margins. But that's kind of the group that I just gave you, those five teams: Cleveland, New York, Orlando, Indiana, and Atlanta as kind of on the fringe.
Do you believe the Cavs will ever be ready to compete for a championship as is?
Yes. I think the Raiders can be for a championship right now as is. The Cavs are, because the Knicks can't get out of their own way, and I'm not going to go off on a tangent on this, but the firing of Tom Thibodeau was one of the most idiotic coaching firings I've seen in all the years I've been covering the league. Ridiculous. But because of that, the Cavs are the biggest beneficiary to these three Achilles injuries. Okay, of Lillard, Halliburton, and Tatum. The Cavs as is can absolutely go to an NBA final. They certainly have enough talent. They're certainly good enough. What I will say about the Cavs is, and I'm quite sure Kenny Atkinson is going to take care of this in the offseason, there needs to be a little bit more of a mental and physical toughness about this group. And whether it's injecting a player that brings that or just kind of having things be a little tougher for some of these guys. What I've kind of heard out of the Cavs organization is that, listen, guys with injuries didn't necessarily play during the season, so you didn't know how to play through injuries. And Garland tried in the offseason, as we saw with the surgery. He was really, really hurt. But the point being about the Cavs is that the injury stuff for them is there needs to be a tougher mentality up and down that roster in terms of how they're going to approach things. And listen, the NBA world's acutely aware of it, but if the NBA world's acutely aware of it, so's Kenny Atkinson. And Kenny Atkinson is an excellent head coach who understands how to fix things. He's been around the league a long time. He's seen a lot. He knows how to roll his sleeves up and kind of toughen guys up a little bit. So, yeah, I think the Cavs, as currently constructed, can absolutely win an NBA championship.
Well, then it makes me feel, Brian Geltzeiler joining us here on the show, SiriusXM NBA Radio, NBA TV. It makes me feel then that their best idea is just standing pat and seeing how this all works again this coming year.
Depends who's put in front of you and made available. Listen, right now, there's trade talk everywhere. And I'll throw this name out to you because I do think that, and I heard rumblings of this last week, when Memphis made the Bain deal, I had heard this was potentially on their radar, and that's that Jaylen Brown may be available. And that Memphis, one of the reasons they went and got 4 first-round picks for Bain is because they could flip those over to Boston in a larger package to be able to bring Jaylen Brown there. So here's the thing I'll say about the Cavs. If a Jaylen Brownish player is not available, well, sure, you're fine to run it back as is. However, if that player is available, that's maybe a guy you would move Garland for. You've got to make that phone call. You have to figure out what that's going to cost you, and do you have enough to be able to go get him? Now, would I trade Evan Mobley for him? I absolutely would not. But that's a spot where I would look if I had to put Garland and Allen in a deal, and whatever picks I still have available that I could deal, would I look at that? I have to look at that. Now, again, I don't think if Jaylen Brown is available, I don't think the Cavs will have enough to go get him. But and I do think he is available right now for the right package. My point being is that, yes, if you don't want to try to force something that's not there if you're the Cavs, but I don't think you get yourself so locked into this roster that you don't keep your eyes open on who can be available. I mean, listen, I saw a report, and I didn't hear this through intel, but I did see a report that the Cavs were involved with Durant to the end, that they threw their hat in the ring there to see what they could do. So I think Kobe Altman has the right idea, which is we're fine to bring this roster back if that's what the market gives us. But if there's something available for us to be able to improve and change this roster construction to one that matches up better with some of the tougher teams in the league, well, I think you got to look at that too.
Do you think that the Cavs as a playoff team have earned respect across the NBA?
No, but I don't think it matters. Like, and I don't mean to give a trite answer to that question. I just, listen, the Cavs have, last 3 years, second round exit. So 2 straight second round exits, 3 years in a row not making a conference final. Are they respected all that much for that? Probably not, because you don't really get respected as a playoff contender till you make one of the conference championships, right? You got to get to that conference final. They are not able to do that. But by the same token, whether they're respected or not, your players still have to roll up their sleeves, go do the work, go win the games, and go get there, regardless of what other teams think of you when it comes to that. So do I think they're totally respected? Probably not, but I don't think it matters, and I don't think it changes the mission.
When you hear about some of this trade talk out there, like you got Josh Kroenke talking about Nikola Jokic in a press conference talking about the second apron, had the Luka Doncic trade had any effect on how some of these guys think? Like, the reaction was pretty bad, but they were still able to get Cooper Flagg out of the deal, so it wasn't that bad. Or is it just like, hey, this second apron is really that restrictive where they have to think about trading guys that you would consider untradeable, untouchable?
So what the second apron did was this. Listen, rich owners are rich owners, right? Mm-hmm. Guys want to turn around and write a $400 million luxury tax bill. Have at it. The other owners that don't go into the tax love it because the money goes in their pocket. So from that standpoint, you know, the second apron isn't all that big a deal. The problem with the second apron and why it is functioning as a hard cap right now is because of how restrictive improving your roster is when you're there. You can't aggregate more than one player in a deal. You can't take a penny more in salary back. Okay. If you're in this, you can't sign a buyout guy. And if you're in the second apron that long, what's going to start to happen is in the early 2030s, your draft pick's going to automatically go to the back of the line. Like, it kills you. It kills your ability to be able to add to your roster. There's just nothing you can really do. So that's why teams are saying we got to stay out of the second apron because we don't have any flexibility. Listen, what the Clippers did last offseason, letting Paul George go for nothing. People are like, what the hell? Yeah, how can you let an asset like that go for nothing when you traded all that stuff for him? Well, what do? They used the money to go out and sign three different free agents, and then they put themselves in the mix where they could trade a couple of players together to go add somebody at the deadline. They added Bogdanovich. Now, again, it didn't work for them. They lost a 7-game series in the first round. But there, it was a model of how you handle some of this second apron stuff as opposed to paying multiple guys in excess of $50 million a year. Like, you just, it's the thing about the league and the second apron era and what they did here, this was designed to achieve competitive balance. They have achieved competitive balance. It's also fair to ask the question, and they'll tell you publicly that they loved two small markets in the NBA Finals in Oklahoma City and Indiana. But when the ratings come in, did the TV partners love it? Now, again, the TV partners, they're locked in right now. You know, you have them, you know, tied to what the contracts are. So in terms of what this system is going to be, this is what we're looking at till 2029, 2030. That's what the system is going to be. But at some point, I can tell you this, for the next system, I don't know if the second apron is, we're going to see as punitive a second apron. And I would think the TV partners at some point with what ESPN / Disney, okay, what Amazon and what NBC are paying for these broadcast rights, they're going to have some input into how this system goes for the next CBA, because they may want to have where there is a little bit of a large market bias. And don't get me wrong, it's still going to be a cap sport. It's not going to be uncapped like baseball. But I think you're going to have it where when you have owners that kind of want to spend into the tax and the larger markets can, you know, have a little bit of an advantage. I actually think from a business standpoint and the privacy on these board of governors meetings, I think that the league and the broadcast partners would like that.
Does anybody other than certain owners like the apron system?
No, listen, yeah, I think there's, listen, I don't think OKC minds it. They haven't minded it up to now. They might mind it
in the future, though, if they have to break up that core.
Absolutely. I think the majority of owners like the apron system. I think the owners that don't like the apron system are the richer, wealthier, higher revenue owners. You know, Jim Dolan and the Knicks didn't vote for it. I can imagine this new Laker group's probably not all that happy with it. I don't know if Steve Ballmer all of a sudden can't outspend everybody with the Clippers, and so I think he would not prefer it. But again, everybody's functioning within it. The system is the system. So this is something that was pushed very, very hard by the majority of owners from a competitive balance standpoint. There was too many teams that felt as though they would go into a season with zero chance to be successful. And they wanted it to be a situation where it doesn't matter what your market size is, you still have a chance to be successful. Now, I will say this, in the second apron system, I think market size still does matter in certain spots. I think New Orleans is not a good basketball market. They're going to always struggle there because revenue-wise, they're just not up to snuff with other teams. And to me, at some point, I don't know that NBA basketball should be in New Orleans. So second apron or not. But for a team like Indiana, the second apron was somewhat of an equalizer. For a team like this OKC group, it was somewhat of an equalizer. Now, you just said, and you're absolutely right, coming up very shortly, Oklahoma City is going to have some tough decisions to make. And they're not going to love the second apron so much. But they've all also built a model with all those first round picks where you're going to watch some of these mid-range contracts that they signed, like Lou Dort and Alex Caruso. Those guys are going to be moved at some point for expiring contracts and more first round picks. And Sam Presti's just going to continue to take bites at the apple to try to build cost controlled rookie scale role players to go around the three major stars he's going to pay SGA, Jalen Williams, and Chet Holmgren.
Brian, we thank you very much for the time. You're always wonderful. We'll talk to you again soon. Thank you.
My pleasure, guys. You take care. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Yes, yes, sir. Brian Geltzeiler, SiriusXM NBA Radio, NBA TV on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
I think we're in a really interesting spot where you and I both agree they've got to do something. I think they need to do something significant. And I think, unfortunately, listen, it's got to be Jarrett, and it's got to be either Donovan or Darius. I think we know who they would choose. I think we know who they're committed to. But I think given Donovan's got a free agency choice in a year, I know he's still got a contract, but that's when the next time to opt in further is. And I think given the fact that Darius and him just do not fit together in the postseason when the levy breaks on that offense,
yeah,
it's now. So it's time. It makes sense that he's in these conversations. I wouldn't trade Darius for Kevin Durant.
Him too.
Any of the Kevins, well, really.
Mobley's supposed to be Kevin James, Garnett. So. Oh, I saw Kevin James, by the way, out. Oh, you're going to hate this. He was out last night. You know who performed in Columbus? Jelly Roll. And Jelly Roll brought Kevin James out to sing songs together.
That is fat man on fat man crime. Jelly Roll, come on, he's not one of us.
And it was big Kevin James. It was not like, I mean, well, hold on. Jelly Roll's not one of you guys now?
That's not what I said. I said Kevin James is not one of us.
Oh, no. You got to see the video. Like Kevin James, because obviously he did like Paul Blart Mall Cop and he was like big for that and everything and King of Queens. But then he went skinny. He went very skinny. And then he started playing Sean Payton and guys like that. Now he's back to being big now.
Yeah, no.
It looked good on him.
You can be fat and not a fat person. Meaning like a fat person's person. For instance, my boy John Anderson, who I grew up with us, Woodridge Height. I'm sorry, I totally copped the thing from Baskin and realized okay. I did it in real time.
I thought you were talking about a Sports Center anchor, so we're cool.
We were at a party our senior year, and we were all relaxed. It was a long day. It was a long day. No other reason we were relaxed. But John, unironically, said to a room full of people, "Man, I hate fat people." And John was not a svelte man. And I just remember thinking, like, you're not, you know, not gobble gobble one of us. You were the opposite of that. That's Kevin James. Kevin James was a jock who happened to get fat and then play fat in a very demeaning way towards fat people. No soul. He's got no soul.
He's back to being large. Didn't Jax one time call you Jelly Roll? And then we talked about Kevin James earlier today, and you have a lot of Kevin James opinions. I think your head would have exploded if you saw this video. And Jelly Kevin Roll, James, singing, yeah, by the way.
I'm going to say this right now. Jelly singing. Roll, do better.
Now,
do better.
How Jelly does Roll. The community look on him and the fact that he clearly was on Ozempic or something and he's lost a lot of weight
don't
himself?
Don't care. The man's lost some weight. He had some health. We don't want the filling to roll out of Jelly Roll.
Yeah. Okay.
He's just rolling now. Taken a few different ways.
He's just rolling now.
Yeah. Or he's just jelly. Right?
Well, no, I think that's the jelly went away.
Well, no, the jelly's if he's got diabetes, but he's skinnier. The roll went away. Right, the point is, no, we're just happy for Jelly Roll to lose that weight. Seems like a legit, like, nice dude. We're in the Jelly Roll camp, even if I'm not a big fan of any of his music. That doesn't matter. I'm a fan of the person.
That's funny how I'm that same way, too, and that I don't care for really any of his music, but I think he's a good dude.
Yeah.
You know, there's certain people you're just like, I think that guy's a good dude and I root for him.
No BS. Very talented.
Oh, yeah.
He just
for sure.
happens
just not
to
my
play
type
in genres that don't work for me. But they're like, there's no disputing that Jelly Roll's talented, unlike Kevin James, who is just a hack. But I wouldn't trade Darius Garland for him. Now, I do think this begs a question. I thought you put it the best way, so I'm just going to say exactly. Is Darius being floated in these talks? Is this proof that they have interest in moving Darius or that they're just doing their due diligence?
I think they're doing their due diligence. And actually, thinking more about it, I think that they got worried that maybe Evan would think to themselves, wait, the only way you get Durant is if I'm involved. And so now they're like, oh, no. But let's let it be clear. Garland was the name that was in this discussion, and he's the one we're talking about. Because, listen, you can upset Darius, and I think it will upset Darius, but you don't want to come close to upsetting Evan in any sort of way.
I don't think Darius would be that upset if he got traded.
I think if he got traded, but I don't think he loves the idea that he would be in trade conversations this year, even though he put himself in those trade conversations last year, despite what him and his agency want to tell you.
I think Darius is in the rare win-win situation that if he has to stay in Cleveland, he's more comfortable now than he has been. But if he gets dealt to anywhere out there, specifically a spot like New Orleans, where he could just run the offense, Jordan Poole gets residuals of having playing next to Darius, and then he just sets a table for Zion. And that's a specific, but it could be anywhere. As long as it's his own team, I think Darius would be happy.
Is Colin Sexton happy?
Well, we're not going to compare a top 10 point guard in the NBA to a combo guard who puts a lot of points up on a bad team, right?
I mean, isn't that the? I mean, essentially, it's a better role than what Darius wouldn't be going to Utah, but we could talk about those type of discussions.
I mean, Darius is going somewhere to be one of their three best players, not.
Yeah, but the point is that it's going to be on a team where he's not going to be playing in big, important postseason games.
I don't know that that's guaranteed.
We can come up with every conversation for Darius that you want. You want to send him to Minnesota, and it's a different conversation, obviously, right? But if you want to send him to New Orleans, that's a different conversation too.
But listen, I think they're doing their due diligence. But I just think for all the different rumors out there, they can say whatever they want. They know that the only way you can fulfill the best odds to be in the NBA Finals next year is if you actually do the logical thing, which is, and it doesn't have to necessarily just be Darius, but reshaping this roster in a meaningful way around Donovan and Evan. So, yes, they are doing their due diligence. I don't think Darius's name coming up in this is accident. I don't think it's just due diligence.
Yeah, but is there anything to the idea that they're trying to skew away from anyone suggesting it was Mobley? Remember when we did the Giannis and Mobley discussions a couple weeks ago? That was it. It was Mobley's name. It was all trade fan trade scenarios, but it was Mobley's name attached to it. I don't think that was an accident that a couple of the NBA people, national people, then got whispers that no, don't even think about it being Mobley's name. That was Garland's name. That was going to go in that return for Durant.
Why would they care about what name people think?
Because you don't want to upset Evan Mobley. You don't want him to think that he's on the market or anything's going to be changed with them. If everything they've said about Evan Mobley is that he's the future and he's everything that matters for this team, they want to keep that, even if it's fake, and I don't think it is, but they want to keep that pristine.
216-474-0092 is and not just the O'Connor part, but the obvious realization that if you traded for Kevin Durant, you would have to give up Darius Garland and very likely Jared Allen as well. Is this proof the Cavs have interest in moving Darius, or are they just doing due diligence? I think it's more than just due diligence. Alex in Cleveland, welcome to the show.
Alex.
Hello, man. How are you doing?
What's up, Alex?
Hey, so I really just think that they're just putting it out there. I really don't think that they're honestly willing to go try to grab KD. I think this was more of just fishing. I think it was pretty much, hey, what did KD cost? Too much. Okay, fine. But regardless, to the point of separating the core four, I don't subscribe to the fact that you shouldn't necessarily be breaking up the 4-4 this coming year. Because we saw when push came to shove, because the 4-4 was injured in the playoffs, it was really the bench that pretty much let it all down. I think we really should be trying to solidify our bench behind this 4-4. And I think that'll certainly help us continue to make a championship run. I mean, I would love to see a garden here to the likes of Christian Brown. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the name, but he's a guard out of Denver. 6'6", can shoot the three lights out and get thrilled. How great would it be to have even him just on the bench behind Donovan and Garland? And he's not a 6'1 guard. So that's pretty much
he is big. Alex, he's big. He's 6'6". Appreciate you.
Alex, we appreciate it. Real quick, Alex, before we let you go, should JP have one of the pieces of pizza left in the studio right now? He's looking pretty famished.
Oh, come on. You got to have it.
Look at that.
It's free pizza. No one turns on free
Alex,
pizza.
That's the way we go there, Alex. I'm not sorry. Famished. It's called drop.
That's my skin complexion.
No. I mean, you look a little peckish. You haven't
a little peckish.
You're a little peckish, and I worry about you. You know, you can have high blood sugar, low blood sugar.
I worry about you as well, though. There's just as much free pizza here offered for you.
We're different boats there. I got to worry about my high blood pressure. You know, I could be on the precipice of diabetes. You don't have these concerns that I have. I think you're right where you need to be. But only you had one piece of pizza.
I've been good just for a day and a half. It's been a day and a half. I like to make it to day two.
I mean, I'd say it's only a day and a half. What are you really ruining?
You do get to reset. That's the point. You do get to reset very easily, and I'm very well aware of this, but we both know it's a slippery slope for me.
Okay.
I have one piece of pizza. We got 10 pieces of pizza, and before you know it, I'm stopping and getting candy on the way home as well.
Oh, not him, Lord. Me. Take me instead. I got to follow this up with some Skittle gummies? Man. First, I mean,
that's not helping me.
Let me tell you, third world problems over here with Johnny Pizza or Pizza Land. I think Pizza Land's better. That's not a little close to Pizzagate. But I think Pizza Land's better than Johnny Pizza.
Pizza Land is at least relatively clever. Johnny Pizza is like, hey, Nicky Pizza, how we doing? Like, you can call anyone, you can throw a Y on the back of anyone's name and then say pizza.
Is this proof that the Cavs have interest in moving Darius? Or are they just doing due diligence? The lead in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.